thought. It was now almost 5 in the morning. She'd slept for hours, although she felt no better for it. She shifted in the seat, her body stiff and freezing, and started the engine. The air from the heaters came out in an icy jet. When the car had warmed up, Erica flicked on the windscreen wipers and waited as the road appeared, washed white by the fresh layer of snow. Noticing the plaster on the back of her hand, she remembered that she had to see a doctor, but the events of last night compelled her to keep going, for now. Andrea was in that pub. Who were the woman and man she had spoken to, and why had the barmaid vanished? It was easier to force the dream to the back of her mind, now that she had a problem to solve. Erica put the car in gear and set off for the police station. Chapter 13 Lewisham Row Police Station was quiet at 5:30 in the morning. The only sound was the far-off hammering along the corridor from the cells. The women's locker room was empty, and Erica stripped off her grubby clothes and went through to the huge communal showers, turning on the water as hot as she could bear. She stood under it, savouring the warmth, and as the steam rose, the tiled Victorian showers vanished, and Erica with them. By 6, she was dressed in clean clothes and alone in the incident room, nursing a cup of coffee and some chocolate from the vending machine. Andrea Douglas Brown stared back at her from the wall, overconfident. Erica went to the desk she'd been allocated, located her password, and logged on to the intranet. It had been 8 months since she'd looked at her work email. Not through any kind of abstinence. She'd not had access. Scrolling through, she saw messages from former colleagues, newsletters, junk mail, and a notice to attend a formal hearing. That almost made her laugh. She had been notified of a formal disciplinary hearing through an internal mail system that she'd been barred from accessing. With a long sweep of the mouse, she highlighted all the old emails and pressed delete. There was now just one email from Sergeant Crane, sent late the previous night. Find attached Andrea DB's full Facebook profile history 2007 to 2014, plus records from her phone recovered at the crime scene, Crane. Erica opened the attached file and clicked print. Moments later, the printer by the door whirred into life, rapidly spitting out paper. Erica grabbed the pile of pages and took them down to the staff canteen, hoping to find it open for a decent coffee. But it was in darkness. She found a chair at the back, clicked on the lights, and started to sift through Andrea Douglas Brown's Facebook profile. It spanned 217 pages, almost 9 years, taking Andrea from a fresh-faced 14-year-old to a sultry siren of 23. In her early posts, she was quite a conservative young woman, but once boys had come on the scene, she had started to dress more provocatively. Andrea's 7 years of Facebook posts were an endless blur of party photos and selfies. Hundreds of photos with handsome men and beautiful girls, rarely the same people more than a few times. It seemed that she was a party animal, and one who partied at the expensive end of the spectrum. The clubs she frequented were the type where you needed to book a table, and there never seemed to be a shortage of champagne bottles littering those tables in the photos. Throughout the years, there was little interaction on Facebook with her siblings. Her older sister Linda seemed to like a few of the family-related posts, as did her younger brother David, but these tended to be only the posts associated with the annual holidays the Douglas Brown family took to Greece, and in later years, to a villa in Dubrovnik, Croatia. The holidays interested Erica the most. Taken every August for 3 weeks, they followed a similar pattern. At the start of each, Andrea would post some family-friendly pictures, a group photo during a meal in a nice restaurant, or the family gathered round a cabana having a casual lunch in their swimming costumes. At these lunches, Andrea always wore a bikini and was striking a pose, her dark hair tumbling over one shoulder as she artfully picked at her food. In contrast, Linda would be hunched down, plate piled high, looking a little annoyed that she was being distracted from tucking in. Linda seemed to grow in girth as each holiday passed, and she always covered up in long T-shirts and leggings. David, in contrast, started out as an extremely skinny 13-year-old wearing glasses, huddled under his mother's thin arm, and slowly morphed into a handsome young man. Andrea seemed closer to David in many of the photos. She had drawn him into a reluctant bear hug, his glasses askew. There were barely any photos of Linda and David together. Sir Simon and Lady Diana seemed to give nothing away in photographs, pulling the same faces year in, year out, broad yet vacant smiles. Here was Lady Diana in a swimming suit and sarong combo. There was Sir Simon in baggy board shorts, pulled a little too high over his hairy belly. As each holiday progressed, Andrea would quickly lose interest in family time and start to post pictures she'd taken of local boys. At first they'd be a bit stalkerish, the group of boys unaware they were being photographed as they stood around smoking or played football on the beach with their shirts off. Then Andrea would zone in on one boy in particular, spending the last week of the holidays seemingly obsessed, taking endless photos. She apparently liked the bad boys, older and darker with muscly torsos, tattoos and piercings. In one picture, taken in the summer of 2009, Andrea was pictured posing on the back of a giant Harley-Davidson, wearing the tiniest bikini and miming driving, whilst a dark-haired lad, who presumably owned the bike, was relegated to riding pillion. He had one hand on her bikini bottoms and was holding a cigarette, its tip glowing close to Andrea's tanned skin. She fixed the camera with a look that said, "I'm in control." Erica wrote in the margin, "Who took this picture?" She barely noticed when the shutters went up on the canteen serving hatch and bleary-eyed officers began to file in for breakfast. She read on, fascinated by Andrea's life. In 2012, a new friend appeared on the scene. A girl called Barbara Kardosheva. "Slovak name?" wrote Erica in the margin. Barbara was dark and beautiful like Andrea, and rapidly seemed to become a close friend, even joining the family holiday in 2012 and 2013. In Barbara, Andrea seemed to have found a boy-hunting partner in crime. Although they now sought boys in a more sophisticated way, pictured together with a string of dark-haired hunks in expensive nightclubs or around equally expensive sun lounges. Andrea seemed to have made Barbara a genuine friend, posting pictures where they shared downtime, in which Andrea wore no makeup and was much less conscious of the camera. In many ways, Andrea was prettier without her war paint, larking about with a genuine smile on her face. In one picture, the girls posed side by side in front of a mirror, wearing oversized pullovers that hung down to their knees. The huge pullovers were old ladyish. Barbara's was embroidered with cats chasing balls of wool, while Andrea's was embroidered with a giant ginger cat reclining in its basket. The phone camera flash was reflected in the top corner of the mirror. Andrea's sister Linda had commented, "Get out of my bedroom, you fucking cow." Andrea had liked the comment and posted smiley face. Then in late 2013, Barbara abruptly vanished without explanation, defriending Andrea. Erica flicked back through the pages to check nothing was missing. Barbara didn't appear once in a photo after this point. She didn't so much as like a post. Around 6 months later, in June 2014, Andrea's Facebook profile was deactivated. There was no explanation or message to her friend saying she intended to leave Facebook. Erica shifted her attention to the phone records. In comparison, they were bland and sparse. Crane had annotated the numbers, which consisted of regular calls to Andrea's fiancé, Giles Osborne, to a local Chinese takeaway on a Saturday, and on the same 7 Saturdays leading up to Christmas, phone votes for the X Factor. The rest of the phone calls were to her family, to the florist her mother ran in Kensington, and to her father's secretary. There were no calls the night she vanished, even though the phone was found with her at the murder scene. The phone records covered 8 months, only going back to June 2014. There was a clattering as a cup was dropped and shattered on the stone floor. Erica looked up, realizing that it was now light and the canteen was filling up. She checked her watch and saw that it was 10 to 9. Not wanting to be late for the briefing, she gathered up her papers and left. She ran into Superintendent Marsh in the corridor. "I read last night's log," he said, raising an eyebrow. Yes, sir, all will be explained. I have a strong lead.
Which is?
I'll tell you in the briefing, she said, as they reached the incident room. When they entered, Erica could see the whole team had assembled at their desks. They fell silent.
Okay, morning, everyone. I'll start by saying that Sergeant Crane managed to pull a full Facebook history for Andrea and phone records, which is great, fuss work. Andrea was very active on the site, and then last June she deactivated the profile. Also, her phone records only go back to June 2014. Why? Did she change her number?
She met Giles Osborne last June, said DCI Sparks.
Yes. Now, why would she change her number and deactivate her profile around the same time?
Maybe she was turning over a new leaf. Some guys get jealous if a woman has exes and a history, said Singh.
She obviously used Facebook to meet blokes and then she got engaged and didn't need it anymore, said Sparks.
But her phone records are, well, they're almost too robotic. Are you telling me she met the man of her dreams and her life was complete? She needed no other interactions?
I didn't say that, said Sparks.
No, but there's something fishy about it. She made no calls the night she vanished. Let's dig around, find her old phone and pull the records. And see if she had a second phone we don't know about?
Also, find out everything you can about a girl called Barbara Kardoshova, pronounced Kardoshova.
She was a very close friend of Andrea between 2012 and 2013, and then she vanished. Did they fall out? Where is she now? Can we talk to her? Check her out. Find her. And also, any old boyfriends. Andrea wasn't short of male attention. See what you can dig up.
But be discreet about that, added Marsh from the back of the room.
Erica went on. I paid a visit to the Glue Pot pub last night. I got a positive ID from a barmaid called Christina that Andrea was there the night she vanished. She says that Andrea was with a short-haired blonde woman and then later a dark-haired man.
Are you going to bring Miss Christina in, get her to do a photo fit? Asked Sparks.
She got scared off when I suggested this.
Okay, what's her surname? Asked Sparks.
Well, I didn't get that far before...
Sparks smirked and nodded his head.
Erica went on. Another woman I spoke to, Ivy Norris.
Sparks interrupted.
Geez, I wouldn't believe anything Ivy Norris tells you. That old slapper is a known bullshitter and troublemaker.
Yes, but Ivy Norris had a very weird reaction when I mentioned the glue pot. She was scared. Now I want everything you can get on that pub. Find that barmaid and interview the landlord. I believe there's a link here to Andrea and we need to find it fast before things evaporate.
DCI Foster, can I have a word, please? Said Marsh.
Yes, sir. Mawson Peterson, I want you with me today. We're going to get the results of the autopsy and the Douglas Browns are doing the formal ID of the body.
The incident room burst into busy chatter. Erica followed Marsh up to his office. She closed the door and took a seat opposite him.
The Douglas Browns are coming in for a formal ID this morning.
Yes, at 10:30.
I'll be issuing the official police statement at this time. Our press officer, Colleen, is very good, and of course we want to emphasise that this is the murder of an innocent girl. However, we need to be prepared that the press will find a political angle, said Marsh ruefully.
Well, they need to sell papers, said Erica. There was a pause, and Marsh drummed his fingers on the desk.
I need to know what angle your investigation is taking, he said finally.
I'm looking for the murderer, sir.
Don't be flippant.
Well, you were just there in the incident room. This witness, Christina, saw Andrea in the glue pot on the night she went missing. She says Andrea was with a blonde-haired woman and a dark-haired man.
I'm looking for those people.
And where is she now, this Christina?
Well, she ran away, and I didn't get the chance to pursue any more information.
Was she aware you were a police officer?
Yes.
Do you think she could have felt it was in her best interest to give you a positive ID of Andrea?
Sir?
Look, Erica, she is more than likely an illegal immigrant, terrified of being deported. She probably would have told you she saw Elvis at the jukebox if she thought it might save her ass.
No, sir, I think I have a lead here. And another woman, a local, Ivy Norris, her reaction to the glue pot was...
I read last night's duty log, Erica. It says you hit Ivy Norris's grandson and then she pulled a knife on you.
Yes, the boy bit me and I reacted badly. But that's not relevant. Sir Ivy Norris knows this area and something about that pub scares her.
Did you know that last month 4 people were beheaded at the Rambler's Rest in Sydenham? She's probably not keen on going there for a drink either.
Sir,
Marsh went on, I've had the Assistant Commissioner up my arse. I have to report to somebody at the bloody Cabinet Office with updates on this investigation. They want assurances that unsavoury or unsubstantiated details of the Douglas Brown family won't be dredged up and played throughout the media. I don't control the media, nor do I leak details of investigations. You know that, sir. Yes, but I need you to... Sir, I need to do my job. Be straight with me. Are you telling me there are things I can't investigate?
Marsh screwed up his face.
No.
Then what are you telling me?
I'm telling you to stick to the facts. We've long suspected the glue pot is involved in placing illegal immigrants in work, and it's a regular hangout for prostitutes. You need concrete facts before you start saying Andrea Douglas Brown was in there on the night she vanished.
What if I find that barmaid and get her on record with a photo fit ID?
Well, good luck with that, because she's probably already packed in the back of some lorry and bound for Calais.
Sir, we've got Andrea on CCTV. She did board a train to Forest Hill the night she vanished, and her body was found close to the High Street. Christ, is it any more obvious that I could be right?
Marsh looked exasperated. Okay, just tread easy. Be subtle in your investigation. The press is watching us.
I will, sir. And I want to be kept informed. Everything, you understand?
Yes, sir. Marsh gave her a look as she left his office.
Chapter 14. The morgue seemed to leech what little warmth Erica had left in her body as they walked down the long fluorescent-lit corridor. They reached a metal door, where Moss buzzed through on an intercom. Forensic pathologist Isaac Strong buzzed them in.
Good morning, said Isaac softly, projecting an aura of calm and order. The white lab coat covering his tall frame was neatly pressed and spotless, a dark leather mobile phone case poking from its top pocket. He wore black skinny jeans and Crocs, and his dark hair was swept away from his high forehead. Again, Erica was drawn to his soft brown eyes below his thinly arched eyebrows. His autopsy room was a heady mix of steel and Victorian porcelain tile. Along one wall was a row of stainless steel doors, and in the centre of the room, three autopsy tables also of stainless steel surrounded by gutters. Andrea Douglas Brown lay under a white sheet on the table closest to where they had entered. Andrea's eyes were now closed. Her hair had been washed and neatly brushed back from her forehead. The bruising had darkened, but her face was still swollen. Erica had hoped for her family's sake that Andrea would look as if she was sleeping, but despite the efforts to clean her up, her body still looked battered. Isaac moved around the trolley and gently removed the sheet. In addition to the bruising and lacerations over her naked body, there was now the coarse, neat stitching from where the Y-shaped incision had been made, running from each shoulder, converging at the chest and moving down between her full breasts to the sternum. There was no fluid in the lungs, so she was dead when she went into the water, said Isaac. The ice preserved decay, but you'll note the blanching of the skin from prolonged exposure to water. Ligature marks on the neck and a fractured collarbone indicate death by strangulation. As I hypothesized, the bruising around the neck indicates a medium-sized hand, no unusual feature such as missing fingers. He paused. Toxicology results show there was a high level of alcohol in her blood, plus a small amount of cocaine. She hadn't eaten for several hours. Her stomach was empty apart from the broken front tooth, which she probably swallowed unintentionally during the attack. He picked up a small plastic phile containing the broken tooth and held it up to the light. I found a residue of an adhesive chemical found in most brands of masking tape on her mouth and teeth.
So she was gagged?
Asked Erica. It would indicate so. There was no sign that she'd been raped. It does appear, however, that she had anal sex close to the time she died, and it appears to have been consensual. Again, I swabbed the anus for semen and blood, but there was none. But there was latex residue and small amounts of lubricant.
She used a condom? Asked Erica.
Whoever had anal sex with her used a condom, corrected Isaac.
But how can you be sure that the anal intercourse was consensual?
There was an uncomfortable pause. Isaac explained, There is a marked difference between consensual penetrative sex and non-consensual. With consensual sex, the body is usually relaxed. Non-consensual sex is often coupled with extreme stress, panic, and resistance, causing muscles to tense and clench, which in turn can lead to internal bruising and abrasion of the flesh. There was no damage whatsoever to the lining of her rectum. Of course, another theory is that intercourse could have occurred post-mortem.
Please God, no, said Erica. I hope not.
It's possible, yes, but I doubt it. This appears to be a crazed and frenzied attack. The killer set upon her like an animal. Her hair has been pulled out at each temple. Would he have had the will and control to stop to put on a condom?
Were any condoms found at the scene? Asked Erica.
The area around the boathouse and boating lake was littered with condoms. We're working on analysing them all, but it's taking time.
They paused for a moment. Do you think Andrea was the kind of girl who did that kind of thing, anal sex? Asked Peterson.
That's a little judgmental, said Isaac.
Yeah, well, you know, we can be politically correct here, or we can say it like it is. Doesn't just a certain type of girl go in for anal sex? Asked Peterson.
I don't like that train of thought, said Erica.
But we have to think like this, said Peterson.
You're saying only slutty girls love it up the arse, ones who put themselves in dangerous situations? Asked Moss.
Do you think this was al fresco sex gone wrong? Erica asked Isaac.
As I say, it's not my job to hypothesize who a person was. When they come to me, I have to make my conclusions as to how they died. You can see here that her hands were tied with a cable tie. It cut into the skin quite deep. Also, her legs were tied, and the ankle of the left leg has a small hairline fracture.
This wasn't naughty outdoor sex that went too far. This was an abduction, said Erica. She could have had sex earlier in the day with the fiancé, and then...
Jeez. We're going to have to ask the fiancé. Is there any other DNA evidence at all?
If there was, it was most likely destroyed by the water, when she was under the ice, said Isaac.
When they had finished, there were a few minutes of downtime before the Douglas Browns were due to arrive and identify Andrea's body. Moss and Peterson took the opportunity to have a cigarette, and Erica found herself accepting an offer to join them, even though she had given up years ago. They stood in the doorway of a fire exit, looking out over the back of an auto repair shop. They could see inside the long row of garages where the cars were jacked up, men working in glowing pits underneath. Erica had dealt with more cases of rape and murder than she could remember. As they smoked in silence, she regarded the young men working opposite. They were young and strong. How close did the average man come in his life to raping women, killing them? How many held back? How many got away with it?
The key is Andrea. Was it someone she knew?
Asked Erica, exhaling cigarette smoke into the cold air, the long-forgotten rush of nicotine roaring through her blood.
"Do you think she was lured into the museum grounds, or did she go of her own free will?"
asked Peterson. "There's so little evidence to go on. No DNA. The CCTV cameras were down."
"Could that have been arranged?" asked Moss. "The CCTV. Could it have been someone on the inside? Someone who'd a grudge against Sir Simon or the family?"
"That's government cutbacks, the crappy CCTV. And if it were a professional kidnapping and execution, would they really leave her phone and her ID at the scene? That seems messy," said Peterson.
"They could have wanted her to be identified fast, sending a message," said Moss.
"She got plenty of male attention. What about a scorned lover?" asked Erica.
"It's possible, but who? She was engaged. She seemed to have turned into a nun since she met this Giles Osborne. We need to talk to him," said Moss.
Isaac appeared at the doorway.
"The Douglas Brown family have just pulled into the car park," he said.
"I hate this part of the job," said Moss, stubbing out the half-smoked cigarette on the bottom of her shoe and replacing it in the packet.
Simon and Diana Douglas Brown arrived with their daughter Linda and son David. It seemed strange to Erica that she was seeing Andrea's brother and sister for the first time. She felt she knew so much about them from Andrea's Facebook profile. Diana and Simon were immaculately dressed in black, and Diana looked as if she had to be held up by Simon and David. David was very tall and thin, and wore a fashionably tight black suit and glasses. Linda was next to her father, and appeared very matronly, in a black A-line skirt and a thick winter coat. They all had red eyes from crying.
"Good morning. We're ready for you through here," said Erica, taking them to the door of the identification room.
Simon put a hand over his wife's.
"You stay here. David and Linda, you two. I'll do this."
"Dad, we're together," said David. His voice had a rich, forceful command like his father's, which contrasted with his geeky appearance. Linda chewed her lip for a moment and then nodded in agreement. Erica showed them through. The identification room was small and institutional, with two chairs and a wooden table decorated with a hopelessly cheery bunch of plastic daffodils.
"Please take your time," said Erica, leading them to a large glass window. On the other side of the glass, a curtain was closed. Erica noticed that the curtain had been hung the wrong way round, with the yellowing lining on show, some of the stitching coming away at the top. It was ironic that the dead were the ones who were shown the good side, whilst relatives and friends waited on the other, as if they were backstage. Diana visibly tensed, as a mortuary assistant drew the curtain back, revealing Andrea, who lay under a sheet shrouded in white. A soft yellow light played over the wood panelling of the viewing room. Erica had never lost the feeling that viewing a body was almost abstract, theatrical. Some relatives remained impassive. Others cried uncontrollably. One man, she remembered, had pounded on the glass so hard that it had cracked.
"Yes, it's her. That's Andrea," said Diana. She gulped, and her eyes watered. She pressed a neat square of white handkerchief to her beautifully made-up face. Linda didn't blink, didn't flinch. She just tilted her head, eyes wide with a morbid curiosity. David stared grimly, fighting back tears. It was Simon who lost control, and with a wail broke down. David went to embrace his father, but he shook the boy off violently. It was only then that David cried too, leaning over, sobs heaving out of him.
"Let me give you some privacy. Take as long as you need," said Erica. Diana nodded as she retreated. 5 minutes passed, and the family finally emerged with bloodshot eyes. Erica was waiting in the corridor with Moss and Peterson.
"Thank you for doing that," said Erica softly. "Would it be possible for us to talk to all of you later this afternoon?"
"What do you want to talk to us about?" asked Simon.
His bloodshot eyes were now cautious and embarrassed.
"We'd like to find out some more about Andrea, so we can discover if she knew the killer."
"Why would she have known the killer? You think someone like Andrea would mix with killers?" said Simon.
"No, sir, I don't, but we have to ask these questions."
"Where is Andrea's fiancé?" asked Moss.
"Giles understood that we wanted to be left as a family. I'm sure he will pay his respects when—"
Lady Diana's voice trailed off, perhaps realizing she now had to organize a funeral. They watched as the family walked slowly across the snowy car park to a waiting car. As they got in, Simon Douglas Brown stared across at Erica. His bloodshot eyes bored into hers. Then he got into the car, and it drove away into the snow.
Chapter 15. Yakka Events was based in a futuristic office block on a residential street in Kensington. It rose up between rows of ordinary terraced houses, like a pretentious sculpture that had been delivered to the wrong address. Erica, Peterson and Moss had to buzz in at two separate smoked glass doors before they were allowed access to the front desk. A young receptionist sat typing at her computer, wearing earphones. She saw them, but didn't say a word and carried on typing. Erica leaned across and removed one of her earphones.
"I'm DCI Foster. This is Detective Moss and Detective Peterson. We'd like to talk to Giles Osborne, please."
"Mr. Osborne is busy. One moment, I'll just finish this and get you booked in for an appointment," said the receptionist, making a show of replacing the earphone. Erica leaned over again and pulled down on the cable, yanking both of the earphones out of the girl's ears.
"I'm not asking you, I'm telling you. We'd like to see Giles Osborne."
They all showed her their police ID. The girl's attitude remained, but she picked up the phone on her desk.
"What is it regarding?"
"The death of his fiancé," said Erica. The girl dialed a number.
What did she think we were here about?
A cat stuck up a fucking tree? Murmured Peterson. Erica shot him a look. The receptionist replaced the receiver.
Mr. Osborne will be out in a moment. You can wait through there.
They moved through to a chill-out area with sofas and a low wooden coffee table, where design magazines were neatly fanned out. In the corner was a small bar with a giant fridge, lit up and stocked with rows of beers, and beside that was a giant silver espresso machine. Along the wall hung a montage of photos, taken at various Yucca events, which mostly seemed to involve gorgeous young girls and guys handing out free champagne.
He'd never employ me with my fat ass, muttered Moss as they sat.
Erica gave her a sideways glance and saw for the first time that Moss was grinning. Erica returned the grin. Moments later, Giles Osborne emerged through a smoked glass door next to the bar. He was short and plump with dark greasy hair parted to one side. His beady eyes were close set, and he had a large nose but no chin. He had poured himself into skinny jeans and wore a V-necked T-shirt far too tight for his bulging belly. A strange pair of little pointed ankle boots, which gave him a Humpty-Dumpty-ish quality, completed the outfit. Erica was surprised that this was the man Andrea had chosen to marry.
"Hello, I'm Giles Osborne. What can I do for you?" he said, his accent confident and plummy.
Erica introduced everyone, adding, "We'd firstly like to offer our condolences."
Yes, thank you. It was a great shock. Something I'm still trying to process. I don't know if I ever will.
He looked pained, but didn't invite them further.
Could we go somewhere a bit more private? We'd like to ask you a few questions, said Erica. I've already spoken at length yesterday with a DCI Sparks, he said, narrowing his eyes suspiciously.
Yes, and we appreciate your time, but do understand this is a murder investigation, and we really need to make sure we have all the information.
Giles regarded them for a moment, and then appeared to snap out of his suspicion.
Of course. Can we get you a drink? Cappuccino, espresso, macchiato?
I'll have a cappuccino, said Moss.
Peterson nodded in agreement.
Yes, thank you, said Erica.
Michelle will be in the conference room,
Giles said to the receptionist on the front desk. He held the glass door open, and they passed through a communal office where six or seven young men and women were working at computers. None of them looked over 25. Giles opened another glass door, which led into a conference room with a long glass table and chairs. A large plasma television on the wall was mirroring a website, which showed rows of thumbnail images. On closer inspection, Erica realized the images were of coffins. Giles hurried to a laptop on the glass table and minimized the browser, the Yucca Events logo appearing on the television instead.
I can't imagine how terrible this time must be for Lord and Lady Douglas Brown. I thought I would make some inroads into planning Andrea's funeral, he explained.
Andrea was only formally identified an hour ago, said Moss.
Yes, but you had identified Andrea, correct? He replied.
Yes, said Erica.
One is never certain how to react to sudden bereavement. It must seem strange to you.
He broke down and put a hand over his face.
I'm sorry. I just need a focus. I need to do something, and arranging events is in my blood, I suppose. I just can't believe this has happened.
Erica pulled a tissue from a box on the conference table and handed it to Giles.
Thank you,
he said, taking it and blowing his nose.
I take it your company is successful, said Erica, changing the subject, as they took their seats at the conference table.
Yes, I can't complain. There are always people who want to tell the world about their new product. Recessions come and go, but there is always a need and a want to communicate a concept, a brand, an event. I'm here to help convey that message.
What message do you hope to convey when you arrange Andrea's funeral service? Asked Moss.
Before he could answer, the receptionist came in with the coffees and set them down.
Thanks, Michelle, you're an angel, said Giles to her back as she left.
That's a really good question. I want people to remember Andrea for what she was, a beautiful young girl, pure and wholesome, innocent, with her whole life ahead of her.
Erica turned that over in her brain for a moment.
She saw Moss and Peterson do the same.
That's really good coffee, said Moss.
Thank you. We did the product launch. It's all completely fair trade. The farmers are compensated far above the market value for what they grow. Their children are given places in schools. They have access to sanitation, clean water, full health care.
I didn't know I was doing so much good just drinking a cappuccino, said Peterson, his voice heavy with sarcasm.
Erica could tell Peterson and Moss shared her dislike for Giles Osborne. This wasn't going to work if he knew it too.
We've come here today, said Erica, to try and build a bit of a picture about Andrea. We believe the best way to catch whoever did this is to piece together her life and her final movements.
Sure, said Giles. It was a shock, a terrible shock. His eyes began to fill with tears again, and he scrubbed at them angrily with the balled-up tissue. He sniffed a couple of times. We were due to be married this summer. She was so excited. She had already started fittings for the dress. She wanted a Vera Wang, and I always gave my Andrea what she wanted.
Didn't her parents want to pay? Asked Erica.
No. The Slovak tradition is that each family pays half.
Are you Slovak? I think I hear an accent. Asked Giles.
Yes, I am.
Married?
No.
Can I ask where you and Andrea first met?
She came to work for me last June.
As what?
One of our sampling girls. Although I don't really think she knew the meaning of the word work. I'd known Lady Diana for a few years. We often partner with her floristry business for our events. She said she had a daughter who was looking for a job. Then she showed me her picture and that was it.
How do you mean that was it? Asked Peterson.
Well, she was beautiful. The kind of girl we love to employ. And of course very soon I was in love. Ha!
And did she work for you long before a relationship developed?
Asked Peterson. No. Well, the love took a bit longer than her period of employment. She only did one shift, giving out samples of Moe. She was terrible. She behaved like she was at the party, not working, and she got so drunk. So that didn't work out, but, we did.
Giles trailed off. Look, is any of this relevant? I would have thought you'd want to be out looking for the killer.
So it was quite a rapid courtship. You only met 8 months ago, last June? Said Erica.
Yes.
And you proposed very quickly into the relationship.
As I said, it was love at first sight.
And you think it was love at first sight for Andrea too? Asked Moss.
Look, am I under suspicion? Asked Giles, shifting uncomfortably in his seat.
Why would you think you were under suspicion? We said we were asking questions, said Erica.
But I've answered all this before. If you want to cut to the chase, I am able to demonstrate where I was the night that Andrea disappeared. From 3 p.m. on Thursday, January 8th, until 3 a.m. the morning of the 9th, I was running a product launch at Raw Spice in Soho, 106 Beak Street. I then came back here to the office with my team. We had some drinks to wind down. I have all this on CCTV. We then went out for breakfast at 6 a.m, the McDonald's in Kensington High Street. I have more than a dozen staff that can verify this, and no doubt there is CCTV footage of most of the places. The doorman on my building saw me arrive home at 7 a.m, and I didn't leave again until midday.
What is Raw Spice? Asked Peterson.
It's a sushi fusion experience.
Sushi fusion?
I really don't expect someone like you to know what that is, said Giles impatiently.
Someone like me?
Asked Peterson, reaching up to twist one of his short dreadlocks.
No, no, no. What I meant was someone who might not move in central London society.
Erica then stepped in.
Yes, that's all fine. Look, Mr. Osborne, please call me Giles. This is a first name office.
Giles, are you on Facebook?
Of course I'm on Facebook, he bristled. I run an events company. We're very active on all social media.
And Andrea?
No, she was one of the few people I've ever met who didn't have a Facebook profile. I tried to get her on Instagram a couple of times, but she was clueless with technology.
Erica stood and pulled out a couple of screenshots from Andrea's Facebook profile. She laid them out on the glass table in front of him.
Andrea did have a Facebook profile. She deactivated it in June 2014. I'm guessing this was around the time you two met.
Giles pulled the paper towards him.
Maybe she wanted to have a fresh start? He said, confused, clearly trying not to react to a picture of Andrea draped over a handsome young man, his hand cupping one of her breasts through her white halter neck top.
So she lied to you about not having a Facebook profile.
Well, lie is a strong word, is it not?
But why keep this from you?
I don't know.
Giles, do you know the glue pot in Forest Hill?
Asked Peterson.
No, I don't think I do. What is it?
It's a pub.
Then I definitely don't. I don't stray south of the river, in fact, ever.
Andrea was last seen at this pub on the night she disappeared. She was in the company of a girl with short blonde hair and then later a dark-haired man. Do you have any idea who they could have been? Did she have any friends in South London, around Forest Hill?
No. Well, none that I knew of.
Can you think of anyone who would want to hurt her? Did she owe somebody money?
No. No, between Sir Simon and myself, Andrea never wanted for anything. The night she vanished, she told me she was going to the cinema with Linda and David. I was encouraging her to spend more time with her brother and sister. They're not close as siblings.
Why not?
Oh, you know, rich families. The parents delegate the childcare to nannies and teachers. There is always competition for affection amongst siblings. Well, David and Andrea seem to get much more attention than Linda.
I was lucky. I'm an only child.
The Humpty Dumpty image came back to Erica again. Giles, small and podgy, sitting alone on a wall, his legs not quite reaching the ground.
Did you ever meet a girl called Barbara Kardoshova? She was a friend of Andrea's.
Erica slid a picture of Barbara across the table.
Giles leaned in to examine the picture.
No, although Andrea did mention Barbara. It seems she dropped Andrea as a friend most cruelly. It happened a little while before I met her.
How well did you know Andrea's friends?
She didn't have many female friends. She'd try and get close to other girls, and they became jealous of her. She was so beautiful.
Did you and Andrea have an active sex life?
Asked Peterson.
What?
Yes. We just got engaged.
Did you have sexual intercourse with Andrea the day she went missing?
What has this got to do with...
Giles started. Please, can you answer the question? Said Erica.
I think we might have in the afternoon. Look, I don't know what this has got to do with her going missing. Asking me about our sex life, it's none of your bloody business.
Giles was now red in the face.
Did you partake in anal as well as vaginal sex? Asked Peterson.
Giles stood up so quickly that his coffee spilled over and his chair fell back.
That's it. Get out now. Do you hear me? This is an informal chat, yes? I don't have to talk to you. It's voluntary.
Of course it is, said Erica. But would you please answer the question? Andrea suffered a prolonged and brutal attack before her death. We are asking these questions for a reason.
What? If we took part in an unnatural act? No, no, I wouldn't marry a girl who...
Giles tugged at the neck of his T-shirt, unable to voice the words.
I'm sorry, but I need you to leave. If you want to ask me any more questions, I want a lawyer present. This is most distressing and unsavoury.
The spilt coffee had reached the edge of the glass table. There was a spattering sound as it began to drip over onto the carpet.
Was she raped? Was she hurt badly?
He asked, quietly now dissolving into tears. He leaned against the table and sobbed into the sleeve of his T-shirt. We don't believe Andrea was sexually assaulted, but this was a sustained and brutal attack, said Erica softly.
Oh, my God,
Giles said, taking a deep breath and scrubbing again at his eyes.
I just can't think. I can't imagine what she went through.
Erica gave him a moment before she continued. Could you tell me, Giles, did Andrea have more than one phone?
Giles looked up, confused.
No, she had a Swarovski iPhone. Sir Simon's secretary sorts out the bill. The same with Linda and David.
Erica looked at Moss and Peterson and they got up.
I think we'll end it there, Mr. Osborne, thank you. I'm sorry about the line of questioning, but your answers to these difficult questions will really help our investigation.
Erica touched his sleeve. We'll see ourselves out, she added. They passed Michelle coming into the glass conference room carrying a large handful of tissues. She gave them a disapproving look.
What do you think? Asked Erica when they emerged out onto the street.
I'm going to say it, because I know we're all thinking it. What the hell was she doing with him? Talk about out of his league, said Peterson.
And I don't think he knew her at all, said Moss.
Or she only let him know what she wanted him to know.
added Peterson.
Chapter 16. By lunchtime, the official news of Andrea's death was playing across the media. As Erica, Moss and Peterson approached the Douglas Brown residence, the bank of photographers had grown on the green outside, churning up the melting snow. This time they didn't have to wait on the doorstep and were shown straight through to a large drawing room with a double aspect view of the tree out front and a large garden behind. Two large pale sofas and several armchairs surrounded a long low coffee table. An open fireplace was decorated in white marble, and in the corner sat a baby grand piano, covered in an assortment of framed photographs. "Hello, officers," said Simon Douglas Brown, rising from one of the sofas to shake their hands. Diana Douglas Brown was sitting beside him and didn't get up. Her eyes were red and swollen, and her face bare of makeup. David and Linda sat on opposite sides of their parents. Simon, Diana and David were still dressed in black, but Linda had changed into a tartan skirt and a baggy white woolen jumper, on the front of which embroidered kittens chased balls of wool. Erica recognized the jumper from the picture on Facebook. Andrea had worn it with Barbara. "Thank you for seeing us," said Erica. "Before we begin, I would just like to apologize to you if my manner yesterday was rude. It wasn't intentional, and I apologize unreservedly if I caused you any offense." Simon looked surprised. "Yes, of course, it's forgotten, and thank you." "Yes, thank you," echoed Diana croakily. "We'd just like to find out a little more about Andrea's life," said Erica, taking a seat on the sofa opposite the family. Peterson and Moss sat either side of her. "May we ask you a few questions?" The family nodded. Erica looked at David and Linda. "I understand Andrea was supposed to meet you on the night she disappeared?"
"Yes, we were due to meet at the Odeon in Hammersmith to watch a film," said Linda.
"Which film?" David shrugged and looked to Linda.
"Gravity,"
Linda said.
"Andrea kept saying how much she wanted to see it."
"Did she say why she cancelled?"
"She didn't cancel, she just didn't turn up,"
said Linda. "Okay, we have a witness who saw Andrea in a pub in South London, the Glue Pot. Does that mean anything?" The family all shook their heads.
"That doesn't sound like somewhere Andrea would go," said Diana. She sounded a little woozy and vacant.
"Could she have been meeting someone? Did Andrea have any friends around there?"
"Goodness, no," said Diana.
"Andrea did get through a lot of friends,"
said Linda, flicking her short fringe out of her eyes with a twitch of her head.
"Linda, that's not fair," said her mother weakly.
"But she did. There was always someone new she'd met in a bar or a club. She had so many memberships. She'd be crazy about them one minute, and the next they'd be cut off, excommunicated for some minor misdemeanor."
"Like what?" asked Erica.
"Like looking nicer than she did, or talking to the guy she wanted to talk to, or talking about themselves too much."
"Linda," said her father warningly.
"I'm telling them the truth."
"No, you are slating your sister, who is dead. She isn't here to fight with you anymore." Simon tailed off.
"Did you go out with Andrea to bars and clubs?" asked Moss.
"No,"
said Linda pointedly.
"When you say memberships, what do you mean?"
"Memberships to clubs. I'm not sure they'd be the kind of clubs you'd go to,"
added Linda, looking Moss up and down.
"Linda,"
said Simon. Linda shifted uncomfortably on the sofa, her broad backside spilling over the edge.
"I'm sorry that was rude,"
she said, flicking her fringe again. Erica wondered if it was a nervous tic.
"No probs," said Moss amiably. "This isn't a formal interview. We merely want information to help catch Andrea's killer."
"I can give you the list of clubs where Andrea had memberships. I'll talk to my secretary, get her to email them over," said Simon. "Linda, you work at a florist, yes?" asked Peterson.
Linda looked him up and down approvingly, as if noticing him for the first time.
"Yes, it's my mother's business. I'm assistant manager. Have you got a girlfriend?"
No, said Peterson.
"Pity,"
said Linda unconvincingly.
"We've got some lovely stuff coming in for Valentine's Day."
What about you, David? Asked Peterson. David had sunk down into the sofa and he stared ahead vacantly with the neck of his jumper pulled up over his bottom lip. I'm doing my M.A., he said.
Where?
Here in London at UCL.
And what are you studying?
Architectural history. He's always wanted to be an architect, said his mother proudly, putting her hand on his arm. He pulled it out from under her touch. For a moment, Diana looked like she might break down again. When did you last see Andrea? Asked Erica.
The afternoon before we were due to go out, said David.
Did you go out with Andrea much in London?
No, she was more Kardashian bling. I'm more into Shoreditch, you know.
You mean the bars and clubs in Shoreditch? Asked Peterson.
David nodded. Peterson added,
I live in Shoreditch. I got a mortgage just before the property prices went mad.
Linda regarded Peterson as if he were a cream cake waiting to be devoured.
David went on, Yeah, when I finally get access to my trust fund, I'm buying my own place in Shoreditch.
David, warned his father.
Well, I am. He asked me a question and I answered.
There was an almost imperceptible shift in the room. A look passed between Simon and Diana, and then there was silence.
So, Linda, you are a florist and David is studying. What did Andrea do? Asked Moss.
Andrea was engaged to be married, said Linda, her voice heavy with irony.
Enough, roared Simon. I will not have you two talking like this, filling the room with this horrible atmosphere. Andrea is dead, brutally murdered, and here you are taking potshots at her.
It wasn't me, it was Linda, said David.
Oh, yes, it's always me, always Linda.
Their father ignored them. Andrea was a beautiful girl, but not only that, she lit up a room when she walked in. She was beautiful and vulnerable and a light has gone out in our lives.
The atmosphere in the room changed. The family seemed to shift on their chairs to move into each other and become a unit.
What can you tell us about Andrea's friend, Barbara Kardoshova? Asked Erica.
I think she was the closest Andrea ever had to a best friend, said Diana. She even came on holiday with us. They were so close for a time, and then she just vanished.
Andrea said Barbara just moved away.
Do you know where she went?
No, she didn't leave a forwarding address, didn't answer any of Andrea's emails, said Diana.
Do you think that's odd?
Of course it was odd.
I think she came from a broken home, though. Her mother was unwell.
Then, of course, people inevitably have a habit of letting you down.
Did they have a falling out?
It's possible that Andrea was... Well, she wouldn't lie about things like that. She'd have told us. Andrea thought that Barbara had become jealous of her.
Andrea's phone records only go back to June 2014, said Erica.
Yes, she lost her other phone. She'd had it since she was 13 or 14, said Simon.
And you replaced it for her?
Yes.
Have you got the number for the old phone?
Why would you need that?
It's just routine.
Is it? I would have thought having 8 months of phone records would suffice.
They could see that Simon was starting to grow uncomfortable. Did Andrea have a second phone?
No.
Could she have had a second phone and you were unaware?
Well, no. The family manages her trust fund. She mainly used credit cards. We would have known if she'd bought a phone, but why would she?
It would be very helpful if we could have her old phone number.
Simon looked at Erica.
Yes, okay, I'll speak to my secretary. She can pull the details.
Erica went to ask another question, but Diana began to speak.
I don't know why Andrea would go all the way over across the river. And then she's taken by someone and killed. My baby. My baby. She's dead.
Diana became hysterical, gulping and retching. Simon and David began to comfort her, but Linda did another nervous flick of her fringe and picked at a piece of lint on her cat jumper.
"Officers, please, that's enough questions," said Simon.
Erica found it hard to hide her exasperation. "Would it be possible to look at Andrea's bedroom?"
"What, now? Your people have already been and had a look."
"Please, it would help us," said Erica.
"I can take them, Daddy," said Linda.
"Come with me, officers."
They followed Linda out, past Diana, who was still hysterical.
David gave Linda a nod and a weak smile and then turned back to comfort his mother. On the way out of the door, they passed the piano littered with family photographs of the Douglas Browns and their three children, all smiling, all happy. Chapter 17. Andrea's bedroom was large, and, like the rest of the house, beautifully furnished. Three sash windows along one wall looked out over the green, where the press were milling about. Linda marched in ahead of them and moved close to the blinds. The photographers below leapt into action, clicking away. Linda yanked the blinds down with a clatter.
"Those beasts, we can't do anything. We're trapped in here. David's been moaning that he can't even have a cigarette on the terrace. Daddy says it would look bad."
The blinds were thick and cast the bedroom in gloom. Linda flicked on the light. The middle window was the largest. Underneath there was a huge desk of polished wood. The desk was neatly organized with an astonishing amount of makeup. A big pot of brushes and eyeliner, nail polish lined up in many colors, powder compacts stacked, boxes of lipstick standing to attention in rows. Over the corner of the mirror hung scores of lanyards and tickets from concerts. Madonna, Katy Perry, Lady Gaga, Rihanna, Robbie Williams. A wardrobe lined the length of the wall on the right. Erica slid the mirrored door across, and the scent of Chanel Chance perfume floated out. Inside was an expensive wardrobe of designer clothes, mostly short skirts and dresses. The bottom was covered in shoeboxes. "So Andrea got an allowance?" asked Erica, thumbing her way through the clothes.
"When she turned 21, she gained access to her trust fund like I did.
Although David still has to wait, which has caused issues," said Linda.
"What do you mean, issues?" "Males born into the family have to wait until their 25th birthday."
"Why is that?"
"David is like any 21-year-old boy. He wants to spend his money on girls and cars and booze, although he's much more considerate than Andrea. Even though he has less money, he still gets me nicer birthday presents."
Linda flicked her fringe again, crossing her arms over her large, bekittened bosom.
"What do you spend your money on?" asked Moss. "That is a rude question that I don't have to answer," said Linda tartly.
To one side of the wardrobe was a neatly made four-poster bed, with a blue and white blanket and some soft toys lined up on the pillow. Above the bed was a poster of One Direction.
"She didn't really like them anymore," said Linda, following their gaze. "She said they were just boys and she liked men."
"She was engaged, though," prompted Erica. Linda gave a bitter laugh. "What's so funny, Linda?"
"Have you seen Giles? When they feed up the ducks for foie gras, he's always at the front of the queue."
"Why do you think Andrea was with Giles?"
"Come on, officers, isn't it obvious? Money. He's due to inherit a fabulous estate in Wiltshire and a house in Barbados. His parents are worth squillions, and they're on their last legs. They had him very late. His mother thought he was the menopause."
"Was Andrea unfaithful to Giles?" asked Moss.
"Boys were always drawn to Andrea. They turned into drooling, pitiful creatures in her presence. She got a kick out of the attention."
"But was Andrea having an affair?" pressed Moss.
"I don't know what she did half the time. We weren't close, but I loved her. And I'm devastated that she's dead."
For the first time, Linda looked as if she might cry. "What about you, Linda?" asked Moss.
"What about me? Are you asking if I make the boys drool? What do you think?"
snapped Linda, cutting her off.
"I wanted to ask if you have a boyfriend," explained Moss. "That's none of your business. Have you got a boyfriend?"
"No, I'm married," said Moss.
"What does he do?"
asked Linda.
She's a teacher," said Moss breezily.
Erica tried not to look surprised.
"No, I haven't got a boyfriend," said Linda.
"Can these windows be opened fully?" asked Peterson, moving to the middle sash window, bending over to peer around the closed blinds. "Have they got suicide locks?"
"No, they open all the way,"
said Linda, admiring Peterson's backside as he bent over. Erica joined him at the window and saw that there was a fire escape leading down to ground level. "Did Andrea ever climb out of her window to meet friends if she was grounded?" asked Erica.
"My mother and father never had the time or inclination to ground us. We use the front door if we want to go out," said Linda.
"And you can come and go as you please?"